And folks? Folks, please sit down. So good morning to our regular board meeting, quarterly board meeting. And happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Happy Valentine's.
Same to you.
This isn't the first time we've had a board meeting on Valentine's Day. I know we had at least one in the 90s that I can recall.
I came on, so that must have been 6 years ago.
Oh, really?
Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. Maybe several times. Okay. So Patricia, you want to do the safety briefing?
Sure. Good morning and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. Please silence any noise-making devices that you may have, please. In the event of a fire, alarms will sound and flash. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. So please drop to the floor, cover your head as best as you can, or go under a table. In any evacuation of the building, staff will lead you out of the building using the double doors in the front of the room. Then the first door on your left, moving towards the grassy area along Jefferson Street. There, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and responding to any emergencies. Thank you.
Okay. Board Member Janicki, would you like to introduce yourself and we'll go around this way?
Certainly. Good morning. I'm Lisa Janicki from Skagit County, representing the counties.
Good morning. I'm Bob Gunther. I'm a public member. I represent the small landowners.
Good morning. I'm Noel Wood. I'm the Timber Products Labor Representative.
Good morning. Patrick Capper, Deputy Director of Department of Agriculture.
Brent Davis, General Commercial.
Jeff Davis, Director of Stores, official stunt double from Fish and Wildlife. Stephen Bernath, Commissioner of Public Lands, does he mean?
Paula Sweeney, General Public Member. Heather Ballas, Director of Designated Department of Public.
Tom Nelson, Public Member.
Good morning, everybody. Tom Laurie, Director of Ellen's Designee from Department of Public.
Carmen Smith, Contract Water Representative.
Good morning. I'm David Herrera, General Public Member.
Staff, please.
Good morning. I'm Joe Schrenick, DNR Forest Practices Division Manager.
Bill Ferrister, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office.
Good morning. Mark Engel, Forest Practices Assistant Division Manager.
Trish Anderson, Forest Practices Board Rules Coordinator.
So, Joe, would you come up, please? So, as many of you know, Joe served with us for how long?
5 years?
I guess I'll look at the plaque. Since July 13th. And we appreciate your service and wanted to thank you with this plaque as our appreciation.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Joe.
I just, I don't know if I contributed as much as I learned from all of you about this process and how difficult it is to combine the science and the social setting and the policy mucking that you have to do. So I just really appreciate the opportunity to have gotten to work with all of you, and thanks to the staff for the great job you guys always do. And very nice.
Okay, first item on the agenda this morning, I'm going to do a report from the chair on several things, and then we'll move on to public comment. Three things I wanted to report on. First was I had at least one question yesterday on what's going on with cultural resources.
And so on February 7th, we really had a great meeting. We had a lot of landowner principals. We had tribal chairs and vice chairs and some directors of natural resources and cultural resources gather along with the state leadership to talk about what had been some staff work that had done, it's been done in the last year. And we are planning on having a small drafting committee moving forward to fine-tune some of the concerns that came out of that discussion. And then hope to, after that drafting committee completes their work, say within the month anyway, we hope to have another meeting of the principals between the three caucuses to move this forward. So I just wanted to...
What is moving it forward, if you don't mind? What is moving it forward?
Well, there's several proposals on the table. One is a funding proposal. How do we get funding so that some of the tribes don't have funding to actually respond to FPAs when they come through? We would like to potentially fund some small landowner assistance to work with the tribes. We'd like to encourage more meetings between landowners and tribes before applications come in for review. We'd like to look at whether prep can be expanded to include any trees left for cultural resources. With that is a concern about, you know, the underfunding of prep.
Altogether, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And of course, training is a big deal. You know, the DNR took some significant hits on their budget a decade ago now, almost. And we haven't been able to put on any cultural resource training, sports practices perspective. State Lands does, but we have not been able to. And so, partnering with the tribes, with that board, that's another thing that we're talking about. And finally, we're talking about maybe doing some pilots in different ways to do business. And want to talk that through a little bit further. Second update I wanted to do really quickly was a legislative update. DNR put a agency request bill on the table early in the session to provide more time to make sure that we had complete applications associated with unstable slopes and that the public had a full 30 days to review those complete applications. That bill and another bill that we were working with some of our partners on to look at transparency regarding the adaptive management process, both died at the policy cutoff. So we don't have any hot bills at this time, but I think there's going to continue to be some discussion around those issues. Yeah, the only thing that is still in play is we've got a couple of public safety funding requests on the table that we are still working. One is we have found that we don't have all the capacity we need right now to do what we need to do, particularly on stable slope applications. And so we're seeking a couple of FTEs around that. And the geology folks, along with WishDOT, is seeking some money to do some very detailed mapping of the SR5 tree corridor. So, because although that's where the OSO event took place, that kind of geology actually exists in 18 other counties across the state. And so we're hoping that if we could get some funding to study that corridor more, that we would learn from that and learn how that information might be helpful in other places across the state. Finally, I wanted to just report, yay, the capital budget finally passed.
And as a result, we got the same thing this biennium that we got last biennium, $5 million for FLEP-2P, $3.5 million for FREP, and $1 million for the ROS program. And so we're trying to gather our staff back because we had to find them other things to do while we didn't have a capital budget and get moving on our those programs again. So with that, yes, Board Member Lori.
Legislative question. I saw a bill, just wondering if you know anything about this cross laminated timber bill having to do with building codes. Do you know anything about that? What the effect it could be, maybe?
I don't know the specifics on that one. I know that there is a desire to attract a facility to manufacture CLT in the state, but part of it, it's sort of one of those pegging, chicken and egg things, yeah, thank you, is there many of the building codes
that have allowed for it,
yeah, don't necessarily address how CLT could be used in building.
Yeah, I just curious, it seems like it could be a good thing.
Yes. Board Member Janke.
Chairman Vanath, when on your cultural resources report, where I just had a question about our contract with Tim Thompson.
Yes.
Where do we stand with that contract, and what's his activity level?
He's fully engaged in facilitating that process.
Okay, I just haven't seen him for a while, so I didn't know if.
Yes, he was in the lead last week when we had the meeting.
Perfect.
Along with the other leaders of the team.
Thank you. All right.
Okay. Tricia, do we have general public comment? So I just remind everybody this is to provide the public with an opportunity to comment on just general topics that may or may not be on the agenda. And we will not entertain comments on the electronic signature payment issue or on the public records fee issue. Elaine O'Neill. Can I ask Ken to come up with me?
No. Chairmember Vernab, members of the board, all of you should have something that looks like this at your table. As I mentioned in the November board meeting, we're having an annual meeting here in May in Winthrop that looks at wildfire, building community, and forest resilience. And in November, and again here, I want to reiterate that you're all invited to attend that meeting. And I think yesterday you heard a little bit about the 20-year forest health plan by Chuck Hershey. I was sitting in on a meeting with that group last week, invited them as well. And Ken, I know, has invited the policy group and the senior group to join. And you think, well, how does this relate? If you look at some of these pictures here, this particular one on the right-hand side is an example of what happens when you get a fire in a very, very dense riparian zone. And I think in the discussion we had with the Forest Health Group last week, we asked, how are you gonna deal with riparian zones? And the answer was they didn't know. They had a pretty good strategy for the uplands. They didn't really have a good strategy for the riparian zones because of the kinds of protection that are involved. So I think there is going to be an intersection with the board or with the rules and the regulations. I'm not certain what that's going to look like. But I think here we have a tour designed in the Mattow Valley Wildlife Area that would be a really good visual to wrap our heads around as we go through this process, both in the Forest Health work groups trying to implement a 20-year all hands, all lands program, and how that may or may not affect rules as we get to East Side template or East Side rule change or whatever that might look like. So I wanted to make sure this was all on your table. Beautiful venue, a lot of people are going just because their wife wants to go sit in the spa, so, or their husband. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne.
I know quite a bit about CLT. I'll come and visit you, Tom, and give you an update.
Ken Miller.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. I'm Ken Miller, here to make 2 points this morning. Rather than another long, persuasive, or not so persuasive plea to have you come to my tree farm for the uncommitted October field tour, I'm just asking, please, let me host you at your October field day opportunity on the work plan. We can provide a great visual of our draft template, and this excuse me, could be an opportunity to hear from other more shy small forest landowners, like the chair has just described for the tribes last week and also a couple of years ago in this particular setting. Smalls just aren't feeling the same level of love. I'll stick around for the work plan discussion just in case you have some clarifying questions. My second point, call me crazy, but here's some food for thought. In my prior life, my career, I was considered a problem solver, maybe not so much by some of you here, but you are struggling with two significant Hatfield and McCoy type problems, taking a lot of time, energy, and money we don't have. Reinvigoration of the evaporating TFW policy, or TFW spirit, and this stream typing in very small upper stream reach is not likely needing full buffers. On the surface, both issues have a common solution without all of the indeterminate, complex science and endless debates about seemingly so little. In my opinion, those wanting more trees further upstream, were willing to assure landowners no net loss of trees, a win-win solution in policy could happen. Imagine the resulting paradigm shift that could occur to the flagging TFW spirit. The commissioner has a sign on her desk. Isn't this the kind of epic shit that Hillary expects of us? Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Okay. Has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes from the November meeting? Both the field tour and the regular meeting.
Chair Bernath, can I just ask for a clarification on, I have so many papers when I arrive on the scene, and it looks like there was an corrective page to the minutes in the day of packet. Is that correct? So when we look at our minutes, we need to look. I just wanted everybody else to know that I found a page that you may not know is in your stack.
Thank you. That was just commissioner. I hadn't quite got there, but I was going to look for it.
Okay.
One of the things that I noticed was, I think it was an error of omission from the November meeting, and I think staff has attempted to provide us with a suggested edit. Can somebody from the staff, it's in the day of stuff, which I didn't bring with me, so somebody got it? Okay. Oh, you're pulling it up?
Trying.
While she's doing that, are there any other concerns or edits that are needed from the November meeting? From board members?
Nope.
So there has been some discussion about Karen's lawyer presenting how the landowner dealt with some of their data at the November meeting. And I completely didn't remember that. So I asked staff to go back and see if in fact there was something in there. And they did find something. And so staff is asking that there's an edit to the minutes to make sure that that's included in the minutes for November.
I'll move acceptance of the minutes of 7th and 8th with this correction included.
Thank you.
Second.
Board Member Laura moves. Board Member Canty seconds. Any discussion? No discussion. Everybody in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstaining?
Aye.
Board Member Willett is abstaining. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to move to talk. We're going to come back to potential habitat breaks this morning. And what I'd like to do is make a few introductory remarks. And I'm going to invite the board has received three different proposals. And what I'd like to do is have each of the proponents come up and explain their proposals on how to move forward. So to start with, what I wanted to do is take us back to Forest and Fish report. And the Forest and Fish report, the reason we've got two rules on the books today is there was a notion at that time that we could model stream typing at a fairly high accuracy. And the notion was the reason we wanted to model it versus doing the underground work that we do now is there was a hope that in degraded watersheds that model would recognize where habitat was. And there was always the goal to move towards habitat, not just identifying where the last piece of fish were. And recognizing that it would take some time to develop the model and deliver the model to the board, the interim rule was put together. And it was an interim rule that was developed as a result of the emergency rule in 96 that was adopted when the tribes brought us like 10,000 points of data saying, hey, you're not moving, you're not protecting fish or, up into the watershed, particularly the Quinaults and the Point Treaty tribes, brought us a whole bunch of data that showed. And so in November of 96, the board adopted that interim rule, which is pretty much the same as what we're doing today. And there was never any intention for it to last for 20 years. But here we are, because around 2006 or so, what we found is the model was not as highly accurate and people were not comfortable with living to what I might say is law of averages. Perhaps large landowners in some cases might be able to figure out whether they could live with something that both had plus and minus error. But particularly one of the hindsight 2020 deals in this process was in realizing that small landowners in particular, but there are other landowners, and it's played out the last 20 years because everybody's doing water technique, at least those that have resources to do it, that people want to come as close as possible to identifying what is now known as fish plus. And so, and what I look at our job today and what the potential habitat breaks are In 2006, when we failed to move forward on the model points are part of the maps we provide up to everybody, but they aren't regulatory points, as was originally intended in Forest and Fitch. What we tried to do about that same time was ask the biologists, hey, you're doing this every day in the field, can you describe how you make that final call if there's floods? And it didn't, we weren't able to get there. And so this was put on the back burner for some time until about 4 years ago when several of the caucuses and policy said, hey, it's time to get this back on the front burner and adopt a more permanent rule and not have two rules on the books. So I look at the science panel report. It's all based on water type mods that have been put on the ground over the however long. And it's a reflection of what we do every day now. You know, some folks feel that some of the options the science panel have put forward are may move the point one way or another. But I think what we need to recognize is until we have a perfect model, which I don't know when and if that's going to happen. Certainly, we're going to try it out when we have statewide LIDAR, but as we all saw yesterday, it's going to be some time before we have statewide LIDAR. In the meantime, we're going to continue to read the streams, figure out where we think fish will likely use habitat. And so that's what this exercise is all about today, is to complete about 4 years of work and put the last piece in place so that we can move forward on rulemaking. So with that, what I'd like to do is Board Member Nelson.
Could I just augment that? I mean,
sure.
In the 20 years, I just want to get on the record. In the 20 years that you talked about where we've had the interview and we're going through this process, I just want to make sure everybody clearly understands that the landowners, the large landowners, stepped up to the original agreement, and we did the RMAP program. The commission was here a few meetings ago and she gave certificates to 43 different companies. So even though we were under this interim rule and we didn't have this permit, we did our part and we replaced those fish passable types starting with the worst first. And so that gets forgotten sometimes, but when you spend $300 million, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of commitment. So I just wanted to make sure that got in your submission.
Sure. Thank you. So what I'd like to do is entertain the three parties that have put proposals before the board. And I don't know whether we want to bring you up one at a time to talk about each of your proposals or bring you all three up. But what I'd like to do is get to the point where the board can see all three proposals together. And I think, Joe, you put together a table.
Yeah.
That attempts to do that, but before we look at that table, I want to make sure that each of the proponents has an opportunity to address the board. So, Ray, do you want to come up first? Representing the Isai tribes? Please, excuse me, the Upper Columbia United States.
Yes. Chairman Bernat, board members, thank you. I don't have any epiphanies for you other than I think our proposal is largely based on and supportive of the science panel's recommendations. Our proposal is to pick fit to that scientific recommendation, which was a 10% 2 foot criteria. I think after seeing some of the discussion and proposals that fervently went on post-science panel report, I We talked to and interacted with the West Side Tribes in their proposal to protect that 10% for the Adams floor. We strongly believe that that's important, but we also believe that the science panel recommendations do that and protect that floor. You have to take the PHBs into context of the full rule that's in front of you, which includes the fish habitat assessment method, which, if implemented correctly, the practitioners going out to determine this point would first contact co-managers to determine the starting point, that being either the known last fish or the model map point. So we're not starting at a point of zero. We're starting at a point that we can inform as co-managers to those folks out on the field. That gives me confidence that using these criteria that are based on data give us an opportunity to correctly interpret each one of these potential breaks and assess whether or not to continue. And so I think that whether it's 10% or 2 feet, that, you know, those may be the end, those may not be the end. And every stream is different. Every stream has a different species, a different set of species, a different set of timing, all of those things up front determined for the practitioner to start this investigation. So I think that the firmness of the place that you have the opportunity to stand on is the data and the interpretation of the data. You had eight of probably the most respected and knowledgeable scientists and practitioners in the Pacific Northwest, and they followed your instruction and they gave you an answer or a set of answers. And I think to ignore that or to belittle that is frankly insulting. And if you do, you strip from the program administrator the opportunity to use one of the most powerful tools he has for you, and that's independent scientists. Because nobody's coming back if you do this, right? They're not going to volunteer to do this. They're not going to even accept your money to do this, because if you don't make the decision on the basis of the things you asked them to do and they did it for you and they gave you an answer, and it's, I wouldn't come back. So yesterday I wore gray, today I wear black. I think that's purely a fashion statement for me. It's frustrating, I know, and politics do play, and I get that. I understand that, and I appreciate it. I think the perspective of the water's landowners and the fear associated with a change that may provide a negative outcome. I don't want to see their bottom line hurt anymore than I want to see that tribal fisherman hurt, or that commercial fisherman hurt, or that recreational fisherman hurt, because they all have a stake in this game. Whether we're feeding our families by treaty right or cultural right, or feeding our families because that's our business, whether it's cutting trees or grabbing fish out of the stream, we're all connected in this. And I think you have an opportunity to stand on solid ground, and I hope you take it. And because the chair invited me up here rather than public comment, I had one other point that I'd like to make, and that is that we've delivered letters to the board, to have the board, to recommend the board make a decision to the ANPA to hire an Eastside scientist.
So why don't we keep that to public comment?
Okay.
Okay.
In the afternoon?
Yeah.
Okay, I will.
Okay. I want to be focused on.
Stay focused
right now. All right.
So any questions about the Eastside proposal?
Yeah, that's what I would ask. Board members have questions about these.
board members would be.
So would you consider the East Side proposal to be appropriate for the East Side and the West Side tribal proposal appropriate for the West Side, or is what you recommending that your proposal be applied everywhere?
What we recommended is that the two best fit criteria for both sides were the same and implement that. That does a couple of things. That gives you one statewide criteria until validation is completed. So the training and all of those things become simple to do because you have one thing to train instead of two potentially different things to train. So yes, our proposal was basically that it's the same criteria for most of the state. Now, you asked an interesting question. Do I feel that criteria is appropriate for the East Side or appropriate for the West Side? I don't think it's perfect, but I think that from a data perspective, you were given an opportunity to have a process that's grounded in data and science that gives the practitioner an opportunity to proceed from a point that's determined through the full implementation of the FM, and these criteria are applied. And so it's a give, it's a compromise, it's not perfect. I don't think that you should elect your fish below 20% on the East Side, but I'm willing to take this because I think that it's based in data and it takes you to a place of solid ground, and then you have a validation study that will correct the deficiencies, if there are any, in this criteria. So you have basically laid out a good process to create and a firm order.
Any other questions for Ray and the East Side proposal and the East Side tribes proposal for statewide? Okay. Thank you, Ray. We may call you back.
I'm here. I got snowed in.
Okay.
Snowed out.
Karen, are you going to present the landowner proposal?
Good morning, Chairman Burnett and members of the Forest Practices Board. For the record, my name is Karen Kulliger, representing Washington Forest Protection Association. I'm the senior forester there. And so in terms of the landowner proposal, what you have in packets today is a more expansive explanation of what our proposal would look like. Instead of going through line by line on that, because there is a lot of technical detail, although we can provide some more information about it, I refer you actually to my testimony from yesterday on page 5, if you have that in front of you. In the middle of the page, it pretty well summarizes what our recommendation is. And essentially, it's for both Eastern and Western Washington. We use PHBs of a change of 5% gradient, and this would be to test. Our underlying issue here is that we think that the board needs more information to assess the cost, the benefits, and the accuracy of these various PHB options. And so in order to do that, we think that the board should assess several alternatives. So the alternative that we put forward to assess is, for both Eastern and Western Washington, a change of a 5% gradient, again, that's both East and West, or PHB number 2 would be either a 30% or a 20% reduction in upstream-downstream ratio or size. And the reason that there's two measures there is that in the July report that you received from the science team last year, it was 0.7. The report that they have today is 0.8, and either one of those would be appropriate to be tested. For the fish passage obstacle, both in Eastern and Western Washington, we believe that the science panel recommendation is good for a vertical 3-foot non-deformable step, for non-vertical, an obstacle gradient over 20%, and a change in elevation over obstacle distance greater than the upstream bank full channel width. I can't believe I got all the way through that without taking a breath. For Western Washington, we have been working with the Western Washington tribes in terms of identifying and trying to put together a concept to deal with an anadromous layer. And the concept that we've been discussing is to presume fish habitat below some gradient. We believe that different gradients need to be tested in that, and it's pretty easy GIS experience or process to do that. And in my testimony yesterday, as well as in the packet today, you have maps showing one watershed where that has actually been done. That analysis was done by the University of Washington. So I don't think that that assessing different gradients is going to be a huge workload. In addition to that, in Eastern Washington, the very good data set that is available, this whole data set out of a study that was done in 2003, wasn't assessed, as you heard yesterday from the science panel. And we believe that these PHB alternatives need to be assessed against that. The other thing that you'll see in the document that I sent you today is an analysis for Western Washington, and we believe that the coal data could be very helpful in this for Eastern Washington, of looking at a different way to look at accuracy. We do not believe that the metric of percent capture is anything other than a summary statistic. It is not an analysis of accuracy and does not give the board or any person an understanding of how individual points or those metrics actually perform in terms of being accurate. In addition to that, I think that we talked yesterday, and I can make more comments if you'd like, about the issues related to the data that was used in the new study. While the new data set is more geographically dispersed, it is not as representative of stream types. So there's a huge underrepresentation of laterals, which in practice may comprise up to half of the surveys for some land bases. And finally, the data collection standard for the new data was considerably relaxed, as you heard yesterday from the science panel, because they could not get some of the information off of the water type mod data. And believe me, I've looked at a lot of these water type mods in the last year, and I totally have sympathy with the science team for that. But although it's been reported that the new data set was randomly selected, that unused portion of the data, so they gave 200 data points to data miners, and some number of those points were thrown out. We've asked repeatedly for information about those points to really be able to assess whether or not the data set is random. And to date, we haven't seen that information. And so I can't tell you whether or not we have confidence in the report that is a random data set.
So if you could keep your comments to what plan on polls was.
Right. And so and the reason that I talk about the data is because I suspect somebody is going to ask me the question about why not just go to the best fit in Eastern Washington and Western Washington. Why are you asking a different alternative be assessed? And in large part, it's because of the data set, the data that was analyzed, the data that wasn't analyzed, and the fact that we think that the PHB combination that we put forward actually meets the requirements of the forest and fish law and HCP. So with that, if there are questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Board members have questions for Karen. Okay.
This wasn't sent to me.
Thank you, Karen. Dave, are you going to, or is somebody?
Jim is?
Okay. Jim Peters.
Do you guys have a copy of ours in your packet or?
Oh, wait. Board members should.
So the 2.9 version?
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Bernath and board members. My name is Jim Peters, Northwest Indian Fish Commission, and representing the Western Washington tribes. Once again, it is an honor and a privilege for me to come in front of you guys again today. I have Ash Robach, which is our Forest Practices Coordinator at the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, and Debbie Kay is biologist with the Suquamish Tribe that will assist me in answering any of the technical questions that you may have. First of all, I want to thank the technical group that have been working hard the last few weeks. Those include WFPA, Western Washington Tribes, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Weyerhaeuser, Conservation Caucus, and Eastern Washington Tribes were involved in most of those meetings also. The intent behind that was trying to get and help you guys out to get consensus on something that goes forward. And I think we made some pretty good strides towards that. One of the other intent of me getting these guys together is getting what TFW was all about, was getting people to talk and talk some of these things. And as I witnessed those conversations go through, all of your guys' staff that was involved in that really listened to each other. And, you know, we got really close to some of this stuff, but just kind of ran out of time. And so that's why we're coming forward with the position that we have here today. One of the things that I carry around with me all the time is the TFW book. It's tattered, has highlights in it, it's marked up. But I just wanted to read one part of this, that myself and the tribes truly respect this, and I know the industry also respects this, and all the stakeholders involved. The participants that the state of Washington needs, this is one of our understandings as we went through this. The state of Washington needs a viable timber industry, and it needs to protect, enhance its fish, wildlife, water, cultural, and archaeological resources. And I think that's still the intent. It was the intent back in 1987 when the agreement got finalized, and I think it is today too. And with the cultural and archaeological meeting that occurred last week, it clearly is an intent of all of our caucuses to go forward on that, and I think this is where we're going with this also. So with that being said, I would like to kind of walk through our proposal. Right up front, we are recognizing that ID teams are very valuable for our process here. We would like the support of the board to set an anadromous zone that protects anything down below that 10%, and it only applies to once per stream type of situation. That all the habitat below that would be presumed salmon habitat. This is an approach that we've talked about that actually protects the low gradient streams that we're very concerned about, that are some of our streams are not being typed correctly, and a lot of our biologists are struggling to deal with that. Part of protocol surveys could still be used below that point, so that if an ID team comes in, or if there's a permanent natural burial that occurs, because we understand that each stream is different, and that we would still like to be able to have people be able to come in and have those protocol surveys, not only in the main stem, but on some of the tribs that are flowing into that area. We would like to have the channel size not be applied below that, because we do in these low gradient streams believe that there are a lot of fish habitat with 2 foot or less size streams that needs that protection for fish at all life stages. And then we have the protocol surveys that are listed on here. And maybe I'll just have Ash or Debbie kind of fill that in. Okay. I do, on the back page, we do have other recommendations.
that deals with man-made structures and still being able to use the default physicals criteria above those man-made structures. And then we have some suggestions on how the validation study gets set up to make sure that at the end that we are confirming that these breakpoints are, that we get enough data collected that then we can set those the proper way based on the information we get. So I'll have Ash kind of go through, or if anybody else has any other statements before we get us to the...
Just really quickly, the reason for this anatomy score is that in the lowland area, we have an issue where most people go to the end of physicals and water type modification forms really aren't available as data points to add to the set because they'll stop 2 feet. And we know that fish are most likely after that because there's no change in the channel. And then a lot of times it's a change from an average of 2 to an average of 1.9 feet. It's very little and no other change. And we know that this is prime hobo rearing habitat. So the data, it would be really hard to collect in a water type modification form because people, instead of electrofishing, default to physicals because it's a better option. So we have a rule that has made it unnecessary.
So this sounds like a significant and important thing to not use the size criteria below the 10% gradient. And so I just want to try to understand with the Eastside tribe's proposal that would go statewide, am I getting it correctly that it's there would be a 2 foot criteria and you guys would sort of lose that protection that you're looking for something below 2 feet if the Eastside tribe proposal was applied statewide?
That's right. And not only that, but it's, if it's not a known fish stream in the model, and in a lot of cases in the lowlands there are streams missing from the model because of the way the DEM was set up. So there are a lot of unknown streams, and that would, those streams you could start at zero and go up, so you'd be electrofishing in the lowest areas.
Rather than just talking about models, a map is missing streams, right?
The map is missing streams.
Or whatever it is. So I used to work with the Suquamish a lot. That was my coverage area as a habitat biologist. So I get it. I've walked streams that are 6 inches wide and you couldn't see the bottom because they were full of juvenile coho because it was a spring-fed system. I don't want to make this more complicated because we're here talking about forest practices and forest landowners. But there is a connection, especially in the Puget Lowlands, with growth management. And DNR doesn't operate stream typing off of forest lands. So that's another important point to make on this particular issue is that local governments will take what decision we make and apply it on the ground one way or another, or they have to create their own.
Can I give you an example of that we're dealing with right now? We have a spot where you have a typed stream that's F. We've got a culvert on the other side. It's been typed N on the map. The only reason for it is the culvert. The city of Bremerton has said that unless DNR changes the map by calling their own ID team without anyone in the city of Bremerton asking for it, they will not address that for a development project. And the DNR has looked at it as they're happy to make the change if it's brought in by the city of Bremerton, but both the tribes and Fish and Wildlife have brought it to their attention, and they will not accept it from them. They will only accept it from Bremerton. So there's an example of where this is getting tricky. And
that sounds like an operational issue.
It absolutely is, but the ability to not have to have, this is something that we deal with in the dozens per year.
Understood.
I just wanted to add to that. You mentioned earlier the round table we had with the cultural resource round table we had. And I was there, as you know, and I talked to a lot of my cohorts within the tribes, specifically the Westside tribes. This is a very common problem that we get. And I think we need to separate it from the issue we have at hand here, because, I mean, it's hard enough for us to figure out how to handle forest practice rules, let alone the city of Burlington planning. But I do think that the cultural roundtable might be a good place to bring this up. One of the requests that was made there was to have some funding for some of these tribes. And frankly, some of these smaller tribes on the west side are swamped with applications for home building and things like that. And the best avenue they have in a lot of cases is to try to rope it into DNR through the forest practice rules. And it's not working very well. So, I mean, I understand this and I sympathize with it. I think we should do what we can to help. But I do think it's a separate issue from what we're talking about now.
Okay, I just wanted to add, in these lower gradient system too, the obstacle criteria that being presented is in, the concern is that wouldn't really impede fish movement upstream, especially in these lower gradient systems. So that is why we wanted to put in the permanent natural barrier as a criteria there to address that concern.
Yeah, they work really well in high gradients, but they don't work well in low velocity streams, because you don't have as many competing physical conditions that you have to work against to surmount these obstacles.
So that's one of the questions I had for the West Side tribal proposal, was the obstacle criteria that you identified is actually barrier criteria, is that correct?
In the anadromous floor, it would be a barrier, as we understand it. Above that, based on the conversations we've had with during these stakeholder conversations, we came up with a slightly more rigorous obstacle definition, but we're treating it as an obstacle there, as a PHB. It's not as a barrier above the anadromous floor.
Okay, so below the floor, you've identified some criteria that is equivalent to a barrier as opposed to an obstacle. And what you've done above the floor is identify criteria for a slightly different obstacle than what was recommended by the science panel.
That is correct.
Other questions for the panel members on the West Side proposal? And I guess, is this a West Side only proposal, or is this a statewide?
I think we were just going off of the West Side tribes.
Thank you. Board Member Sabine and then Board Member Davis.
So I appreciate that you've included the ID team option, because that seems like you were allowing for some flexibility in sort of one person circumstances. But can you talk a little bit more about your sense of how that should be used? Like, under what conditions would an ID team be called? And then how in your experience have ID teams worked in the past to sort of, you know, is that process satisfactory to you to come up with a good answer? That would be an exception to the conditions in the anadromous zone that you guys identified.
I think that rulemaking is something where you can maybe get it about 90% right, and 10% of the time the spirit of the law and the letter of the law are going to be at odds with each other. I think the ability to call in qualified technical biologists to figure out if this is or is not reasonably fish habitat is a good call for an ID team. I think we need to be able to have that ability over top of any set of rules, because we're never going to get it 100% right.
Just to be clear to the board members, ID teams were staff. That's already part of something that we've approved in the past to continue forward. So we weren't planning on eliminating that from the new rule. So I just wanted to be clear.
No, there. But to have something in rule, it becomes complicated sometimes, unless it says that ID teams have the right to overrule something.
then someone will say, well, I can only make a call so far as rule says, and I can't go further than that. And this would allow someone where the spirit and the letter are at odds to be able to do something like that.
Got it. Thank you for that clarification. Board Member Davis?
Yeah, I hopefully the other folks will be able to come back up, because I have the question that I asked the panel yesterday, which is, you know, in the back of my mind, how do these proposals differ, if at all, from what we're currently putting on the ground? And I don't know if that's can be answered at this point, but I do wonder, like, is this pretty close to what we're getting on the ground today? Is it moving it up a little bit? Is it moving it up or down a lot? Because I think, as Board Member Sweeney said yesterday, we have that fish protection responsibility and resource protection responsibility and the economic side of this too. So I just was wondering, from your practical experience and your proposal, how do you think, and I won't hold you to it, but I'm just kind of curious.
So our biggest concerns, I think the Science Panel did an excellent job. Their data points were in the headwaters, and we are not in the headwaters, so we have some differences. Currently, our biggest issues are the ability to regulate below 2 feet when you do have situations like 6-inch streams full of coho, or floodplains where you know they will be full of coho at a season where you're not looking right now. That is something we deal with that we would like to be able to fix. The ability to have the regulatory heft to say this is fish by rule would help us with development pressure right now. So that would make a difference. As far as the status quo, the biggest difference right now versus what is being proposed is that right now barriers would be kind of our point of stopping and in calling fish, versus if you're electric fishing, you can now call an obstacle in a stream that may be disturbed and the only fish in it is remaining is an adverse coho. So those would be the three differences I see.
So a couple of questions. Since 88, I think, anytime you see a fish, you call it fish. So are you also telling me that you guys see coho in a small stream below 2 feet, that you're having difficulty getting that regulated appropriately?
No, we just have a very wide network of very small streams, and you get one chance to look at them from a permitting standpoint, and you come in and it's beautiful, perfect fish habitat, and it drops from 2 feet to 1.9 feet. And regulatorily, if you don't happen to see fish that day, you have to call the end fish.
Okay. The other question I have for you was, wanted to allow for protocol surveys to take place below the floor. What circumstances would you like that to?
Well,
my short answer would be that would depend on what the ID team is seeing, what the proponent is putting forward. If there's a situation where the proponent believes that this is not fish habitat, for whatever reason, maybe there's a barrier that isn't quite meet the current the definition of whatever was put in there, but they think that that really works as a barrier in this particular situation, and they want to be able to do their stream. So that's just to allow them that flexibility, not make it so rigid that it doesn't pass the silly grin test.
Board member? Member, please.
I just wanted to comment on one of the points that you just made about not seeing fish in a stream that could have fish one day. I think we heard yesterday, particularly from the panel, that they a recommendation that we look in the south.
I would be very much in favor of that, definitely, the ability to look in more than one season. And I hope that as we move forward, there's another technique, eDNA, and if we could use that more times a year, that might be one way to do that.
The other thing that I've heard also with coho, sometimes that can be there 1 year, but then they not utilizing that for a couple more years based on the budgets or the stock or whatever. So that's another reason why being careful on this. If the gradient is, you know, fairly flat and juveniles can get up there, or maybe even adults can get up there, but it might not be that year at all that they might not be utilizing that.
I want to make one other point. I realize that, you know, it's hard to have a perfect system right away, but we also are under a lot of development pressure right now. So a lot of these points are going to be more clearly called out in the validation study in the future, but we are intentionally conservative with the thought that we can make it put a finer point on the exact points post-validation study and protect any risk for all of the development that's going on right now in our area.
So I appreciate that, and I appreciate the question or the point that you made about GMA. But I'm also wondering if this how do I phrase this most accurately? So the stream typing in the anadromous zone, does it also occur on, you know, private landowners that are continuing to do forest practices? In other words, is this applicable? This isn't just your recommendation in the anadromous zone is not just dealing with development pressures and non-typical forest practices issues. It's also dealing with, you know, landowners have land in that area, and this change will encompass the way people do stream typing for small and large forest landowners.
That's right, yes, okay. And not just industry, but also a lot of people, when they develop, will use the forest practice rules to cut their trees, leave it in a X number of year moratorium, and then sell it as development as well.
So. Okay. So it's essentially
hybrid.
All of the above.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We're going to do this, Davies.
So if you're focused, and this proposal is really focused on the west side, so do you have a suggestion for the east side, or do you suggest, or are you just wondering what, because we're looking at something for the state?
We were having conversations throughout this with Eastside folks, and those voted representative from the UCUT as well as representative from the Yakima. You heard from the UCUT folks, so you know, I don't think we feel comfortable trying to get them out. But I can't speak to the Yakima at this point, so I'll just leave it at that.
Other questions from panel members from the board? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. How about be back at 25 hours? Thank you.